please the court, counsel. Tony Axum representing appellant Akilah Dean, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The evidence in this case was insufficient to establish that Ms. Dean possessed the mens rea for bribery or under count 12 of the indictment or extortion under count 14 of the indictment.
I'm wondering if there's any element of either bribery or extortion that was proved by this evidence.
That is certainly a question, Your Honor. The district court erred in deciding otherwise based on the fact that this was an FBI sting operation in which Ms. Dean provided a billiards license to the Omni Hotel once it paid the required fee. Everything about this transaction, Ms. Dean wanted the Omni to believe was legitimate.
So do you see any difference in the way in which the government sought to prove its case under the bribery statute and the Hobbs Act? Are they identical?
The bribery statute and the
Hobbs Act? In other words, as you understand it, is the government's extortion theory identical to its bribery theory?
The theories are identical.
Yeah, okay.
And
both require a bribe. Even the extortion claim requires a bribe under the government's theory, right?
Essentially, they both require a bribe.
Right.
The Supreme Court has outlined that both bribery and extortion require a quid pro quo, and actually, the government didn't try to prove any more for one or any less for the other. The district court's conclusion that because this was a sting operation, that Ms. Dean necessarily had the mens rea for bribery or extortion was simply incorrect.
Now, the district court did dismiss all the other counts except these two, right?
It dismissed all the other counts except these two. And the court's theory was that because it was impossible for, because the Omni Hotel did not actually have a billiards hall, it would have been impossible for Ms. Dean to issue a billiards license. The problem with that theory is there's absolutely no evidence that Ms. Dean could not issue a billiards license without the physical space for a billiards hall.
And there's no reason to believe she knew that there was no space for a billiards hall.
And that's the crucial question, because both of these statutes require the defendant's specific intent. The quid pro quo requires the defendant's specific intent, and the government simply did not prove that. No reasonable juror could infer beyond a reasonable doubt from the testimony of Steve Poley, who the court relied on and the government relies on in its argument, that no license ever existed for a billiards hall, or Ms. Dean did not see a license in the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs computer database. Without facts to support these claims, they couldn't have inferred, the jury could not have inferred that Ms. Dean didn't see a billiards license in the computer database, so that it could further infer that she must have made up the fee, and further infer that she must have made up that the fee was late for the purpose of signaling her intent that she wanted to solicit a bribe or extort money from the Omni. The gaps simply abound in the government's evidence. And really, the government's problem from the outset was with the FBI, and the FBI.
Well, the government's problem from the outset was the charge it chose to bring.
That is correct.
Right. That's really the problem, that she may be guilty of a crime, but it's not good enough to prove somebody's guilty of something. You've got to prove they're guilty of what they're charged with, and the government's problem here was that they charged you with the wrong offense, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
If the court doesn't have any other questions.
Well, they could. Let me just ask you a question. I just want to be sure I understand your theory of the extortion statute. As I read the cases, the government could have charged her under the extortion statute of false pretense.
False pretense.
Extortion, right? In other words, that did not require a bribe.
That is correct.
But did the government ever make that
The government never made that argument.
They never made that argument.
She was not so charged.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't. Is there any? I guess there's a difference between how she. I mean, she was charged with violating the extortion statute, so they could have introduced evidence to support a false pretense theory of extortion, right? Correct.
That is correct. But
you're telling me now that wasn't their theory in the district court, right?
That wasn't their theory in.
And it isn't here.
The government has never alleged that.
Okay. Well, we'll ask the government about that to be sure. Yeah.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Peter Smith on behalf of the United States. In this case, the government showed sufficient evidence of intent where appellant, a District of Columbia employee, demanded and received a $1,275 cash payment.
You go down to the DMV and you want a driver's license and you give some money to the DMV employee for your driver's license and she gives you a driver's license. Have you bribed her?
It depends on what the...
No. Have you bribed her? You know nothing else. This is what you know. Is there a bribe there?
You know nothing... If you know nothing about the defendant's intent, which is the DMV's employee's
intent...
I'd assume
intent, that she is a rotten employee, and she's printed up a bunch of false driver's licenses, she's pocketing all the money. Have you bribed her?
If she's pocketing...
You don't know that. She is pocketing the money. You just pay your license fee, and you get a license, and she sticks money in her pocket. Have you bribed her?
The answer...
You've bribed her? No. Or has she... No, you've not had.
No.
She's embezzling the money of the District of Columbia, right?
If she later takes the money.
Right. We posited that she put it in her pocket. That's her pocket. That's not the district's pocket.
Assuming that the money is legitimately owed, that the payor has paid the amount that is owed.
Assume it's not. Assume she gave you a false license. For all you know, it's a real license. But she gave you a false license. She's defrauded you. She's committed fraud. But you haven't bribed her.
Then that could...
She's embezzled the government's money, the district's money. But... She hasn't extorted money from you, right?
Well, I guess under the last hypothetical, Chief Judge Santel, that you gave, that could be bribery, because what the mens rea component of bribery is...
It could.
I'm sorry?
I don't guess it could.
Well, let's talk about what the mens rea requirement is. The requirement is that the defendant has taken the money corruptly, and that means...
Why didn't the government just charge her with false pretenses and with embezzlement?
It might have been able to bring additional charges.
Could have been able to have done that. Why didn't it?
Well, with respect to the embezzlement count, I don't think that the government could have charged her with embezzlement, because embezzlement requires the defendant to have taken the money of his or her employer,
yeah,
which here would be the
DC's
agency.
DC's money that was coming in here. She took it on behalf of DC from the citizens, and then she put it in her pocket. So why is that not embezzlement?
Well, if those were the facts, that could be embezzlement. But what happened here was that the defendant essentially invented a $1,275 fee, which she required to be paid in cash, had to be paid directly to her. She did not follow the proper channels of the agency. It was not owed to the agency.
Right, but was there an agreement between her and the hotel to issue the license in return for a payment to her?
Yes, that's
there was?
No,
that's evident from
payment to the district, wasn't it?
Right, that was her intention, but there was no, I didn't see any evidence that she and Pauly, is that his name?
Steve Pauly, that's correct.
That the two of them agreed that, you know, that this money was for her, that she'd pocket the money in return for issuing the license.
Well,
isn't that what a bribe is?
The agreement doesn't, well, a bribe doesn't necessarily require an express
It doesn't?
Agreement.
But that's what the case law said. What about Sun Diamond and McCormick?
Well,
that's what they say.
In Orunuga, this case, this
Orunuga,
court said
Orunuga
that...
Orunuga is a very different case. Orunuga, the problem in Orunuga wasn't that there was an agreement, it's that the defendant didn't fulfill his agreement. Here she fulfilled her agreement. The question is, here she did what she said she would do. But what's missing is the agreement.
Well, you can infer an agreement from the record, but here you have a sting operation, so you don't Steve Polly knows when he's communicating with appellant that it's a sting operation. And what appellant is asking is for a $1,275 cash payment. We know from other record evidence, which I can discuss, that that is an illegitimate payment that is not owed to the D.C.
Counsel, nobody disputes that it's an illegitimate payment. None of the others that she received were legitimate either. But the bribe is not synonymous with illegitimate payment. You don't have a bribery here, do you?
Well, what you have is you meet this court's test in Gatling. You have corrupt intent, which means she accepted money with a specific intent of performing an official act in return. She accepted the $1,275 in cash. She required it.
She said to him, it's $1,275 for a license, but you know, I can make these things happen a whole lot faster if you give me three in addition to the $1,275 you're paying the district. That three would have been a bribe. But here she's asking for money to go to the district. Now, it's not going there, but she's asking for money to go to the district. There's never been an agreement for a tit for tat. There's never been a Sun Diamond element met here, has there?
Well,
this is just not bribery, is it, Ken?
It is, because the focus has got to be on the defendant's here, appellant's intent. And appellant
you're
intended to.
The focus that require the focus has to be not just on intent, but on an agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well, there has to be a quid pro quo. And I guess we disagree about whether the quid pro quo has to be an express agreement.
Not with us, with the cases.
Well, Evans, for example, Evans is an extortion case, but Evans says the focus is not on the payer.
Yeah, but Evans followed McCormick, and McCormick said you have to have an agreement.
Yeah.
But it can be implicit. I mean, assuming that you have to have an agreement, it can be an implicit agreement. It can be, as Evans discussed, a wink and a nod. You can infer the agreement.
You have
from
a wink and a nod here? Evans discussed it could be a wink and a nod. You don't have a wink and a nod.
Well, sir, you do.
You don't have a wink and a nod. You have somebody telling a citizen, it costs X dollars to get Y license. Citizen pays X dollars to get Y license. Now, in fact, the perpetrator is deceiving the citizen. There is no such license. There is no such fee due. She's going to steal the money. But that doesn't make it into a bribe. It makes it into either embezzlement or false pretenses, but not a bribe, and not the kind of extortion you've charged.
Well, it's a sting operation, so we know that the whole thing
is a
fiction.
But how does that change anything about her guilt?
Well, it means
it's a sting operation. So what?
It can't be embezzlement because it's not her employer's money that she's taken. She's required
Yes, it is. It's not her money. It's paid into the District of Columbia for a license. Now, the fact that it's paid in as part of a sting operation doesn't change any of that.
Also,
suppose instead of this being a fictitious license, this had been for one of those other licenses that she sold before. The district judge rightly ruled that the fact that they were paying it in and she put it in her pocket didn't make it into bribes or extortions, it made it into embezzlement. Now here, the fact that the district received the money for a license that wasn't properly a license doesn't change any of that, does it? It's coming in for the district. The sting operator believes that she's likely to take it, but the agreement is, I'm paying this to get a license from the district. Isn't that the agreement?
Well, I differ with some of the court's presuppositions or suggestions. For example, it does matter whether the money is illegitimate because that supports an inference of appellant's intent.
We're not talking about that. You say it made a difference that it was a sting. I said, why does it make a difference that it's a sting? It's still supposed to be going to the district. When she takes the money, she's representing that it's going to the district, not that it's coming to her.
But she knows that it's.
Also, neither,
she knows
neither
that
one
it's
us,
not.
Neither one of us are disagreeing with you that you need corrupt intent. Mm-hmm. The problem is you're stopping at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. No one questions that there's corrupt intent here. The
but
question
the,
is corrupt intent to do what?
Exactly.
The focus is on the defendant's intent. And
corrupt intent, and you've got that, but corrupt intent to do what? Listen to the question.
Right. To require a $1,275 cash payment in order to issue a billiards parlor license to the hotel.
And
that's the quid pro quo.
How do you, even if you're right that you can imply the necessary intent for quid pro quo, where is it here? How do you, from these facts, conclude that there was an implicit understanding that she would pocket this money in return for issuing the license? Because the hotel thought they were paying for a license.
Well, again, the focus is on the defendant's intent, so you don't...
In an agreement, the focus is on both intents, counsel. There's no such thing in the world as a unilateral agreement.
Well, in Evans, the Supreme Court expressly said that the payor's intent is irrelevant, or is essentially irrelevant.
It does fit within the language of Evans, you're right. But Evans follows McCormick in other cases, which require...
Which require...
An agreement.
Well, they require a quid pro quo.
Yeah, an agreement for a quid pro quo.
And if you look at the appendix, pages 77, 78, and 79, yeah. You see the sort of wink and a nod that's going on here. You have an extended discussion between Steve Polly and appellant where she requires a cash payment. She initially says it's for the license. Then she says it's a back fee. Then at another point, she says it's a late fee. Of course, it's a sting operation, so Mr. Polly knows that the hotel doesn't have any.
I don't see why you think being a sting operation makes any difference whatsoever.
Well, even if...
That does not change her intent or her act.
It doesn't. I agree with that. But if the focus, as the court has suggested, is on Mr. Polly's intent, or at least Mr. Polly's intent...
It's not on Mr. Polly's intent. It's on an agreement. And it takes two parties to have an agreement.
Well, even if that is required, and...
That isn't an even if. That isn't an even if. You have to have an agreement.
See, you cited us to this. I assume what you cited us to was a transcript of the recorded phone call?
Well, yes.
The key is this language. She says you have five tables, so it's $1,275. This is late, so it has to be in cash. That's it right there. There's nothing in there at all that suggests that, as far as this indicates, that the hotel is getting licenses for five billiard tables for $1,275. There's nothing in here at all that suggests that it's going into her pocket.
Well, I do want to talk in a moment about the first part of that question, which is whether it's required for the payor to know whether it's going in the appellant's pocket. But if you continue along in the discussion, Judge Tatel...
Yeah, so how can it be a bribe if the payor doesn't know that?
Well...
It's not a bribe. You go in and get your... and ask for the driver's license, and you pay your fee, and she puts it in her pocket. You haven't bribed her. Now, if you come in and say, I'm not entitled to a license, I really live in Virginia, and she said, that's all right, you slipped me an extra five, then that five is a bribe. But the idea that paying for a license becomes a bribe because the employee is stealing it, just that's alien to the definitions of the words involved.
Well, I think that the court's interpretation doesn't fully square with, for example, the language in Orenuga, where the court embraced a jury instruction that said it's not a defense of bribery for the defendant to have done something the defendant would have done anyway. That's legally required of the defendant to do. So even if appellant thought that the $1,275 was an actually owed to the District of Columbia government, and even if she represented that to Mr. Polly, that still would not be a defense to bribery. And in connection with Evans, where Evans says you don't focus on the payor, and we know that Evans says a wink that you can't foreclose a wink and a nod agreement. That you
the
can't
wink and a nod agreement language is completely irrelevant to this case. You don't have a wink and a nod.
Well, you when you follow through the transcript on pages 78 and 79. I'm sorry?
Not when I do. I've done that.
Okay.
And you still don't have a wink and a nod.
I would argue that when after the portion of the transcript that Judge Tatel quoted, she then says that the $1,275 must be paid in cash. Mm-hmm. She describes it alternately as a back fee or a late fee, which is inconsistent with what she previously said, which is it was the fee for the license. And as the district court found, we know there are no pool tables. We know that the hotel doesn't have that
facility. Did she know
facility.
There were no pool tables?
Again,
she'd known it. She wouldn't have done this, but that's...
That's no.
None of that has anything to do with whether this is a bribe or not.
Yes.
Even if I don't plan to use that driver's license, it's still not a bribe if I pay her money and she gives me a driver's license, even if she steals the money. And there's no difference there than here.
But here you have many other facts which suggest that there is a bribe or a wink and a nod agreement. You have, first of all, a sting operation. You have appellate.
The sting operation is what the state's doing. That's not, you can have, all of these could have been sting operations, and it wouldn't have changed whether she had done anything wrong or not.
Well,
sting operation is what the state's doing.
But using common sense and drawing reasonable inferences from the record, which is the standard of review in this case, appellant requires the fee to be paid in cash.
Your time is up. Well, I
just have one question. I just want to be sure that I understand the argument you're making about extortion. Am I right that you heard the questions I asked counsel for defendant?
I did.
And you agree with that you are not, or the government has never argued false pretenses extortion here?
That's correct. We did not argue in the trial court. We're not making that argument.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Do you need any rebuttal? Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted.